Okay, it's my pleasure to call to order for the very first time the Senate Committee on Workforce. Today is the 2nd of February, 2015, and I'd like to welcome everyone here and particularly my fellow committee members. We are going to start off with an organizational meeting to adopt rules, and then we'll have a chance to introduce ourselves, and then we'll move into an information session where we'll be hearing from the Boley director, Commissioner of Labor and Industries, and the head of the apprenticeship unit. To begin what I'm calling a brief Workforce 101, which we'll be doing for the next few sessions. So with that, let's open the organizational meeting of this committee. Vice Chair Thatcher.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 2nd, 2015.
Okay, Vice Chair Thatcher moves adoption of the committee rules. Colleagues, these are template rules. If you have met in committee already, they'll look very familiar to you. Anyone have any questions about them? Okay. Hearing none, anybody have any objections to our adopting the committee rules? All right. Seeing none, the rules are adopted. So, colleagues, I just want to say a few things about the committee. This is a brand new committee, and it has been created to deal with a number of different issues related to workforce, to the workplace, and to workforce development. And I'm really excited about it, just coming from my own background. As many of you know, when I'm not a senator, I'm a community college faculty member, which I have been for more than 30 years, working very closely in all areas related to workforce development. And when I first came to the House of Representatives in 2009, we had a subcommittee of business and labor on workforce development, and it was my pleasure to serve on that. And that's where I really got a new sense of the workforce system in the state writ large. And I will say it was my first exposure to how confusing and perhaps in some places inefficient and in some cases redundant our workforce development system is. And, you know, over the years we have made efforts to make it simpler and more effective and more efficient, but I think there's still work to be done there. And that is something that I hope our committee will be looking at over the course of the term. The other, the other thing that we started working on back then was the to stop the disinvestment in career technical education in our secondary schools. And, you know, I'm happy to say that we have made progress there, but there's still a lot of work to be done. And that's also going to be a focus of this committee to energize our investments in CTE and STEM and bring them closer together. And also looking at apprenticeship and making apprenticeship in this state more effective and extend to more people. There are, I think, a number of really important and exciting workforce development initiatives that we'll be looking at over the course of the session. At the same time, we'll also be working on bills designed to make the workplace fairer, to make sure that businesses that are not playing by the rules, that are not treating their workers as fairly as they could and getting a business advantage over those companies that are treating their employees appropriately. We need to pay attention to that. And so we'll be seeing a number of bills dealing with that, as well as just a variety of issues related to unemployment insurance and workers' compensation and those kinds of things that you would expect to come to a workforce committee. Knowing you all's background, the background of each of you, I'm very pleased to have this group of people working on these issues. So, and I'm also really pleased that our committee administrator this session will be Matt Germer, and I'll have Matt introduce himself. We've already started working together, and we're going to be very well served with him.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Matthew Germer. This is my first time working with the Oregon State Legislature, and I will be working here for the session. I am currently a law student. I have one semester left to go at University of California, Irvine. And prior to that, I was an analyst for the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. And I'm looking forward to working with you all this session.
Thank you, Matt. Vice Chair Thatcher, you want to make some comments?
Oh, sure. Kim Thatcher, represent District 13, which is encompasses a whole bunch of new areas that I haven't represented before, and I got to get that down. But anyway, it's mostly unincorporated Washington County and Clackamas County, surrounding Wilsonville, Sherwood, and outlying areas of Beaverton, Alloa, and et cetera, and then down to Kaiser, St. Paul, and Newburg. And I was previously in the House, served on the Business and Labor Committee for a number of sessions, and I also am an employer and employ a number of people, and both union, non-union, subject to prevailing wage, not subject to prevailing wage, and all over the board. So it's gotta have that background too.
Yes, so I am Senator Diane Rosenbaum. My District 21 includes Portland, Milwaukee, and Oak Grove in Clackamas County. I have a special passion for the issues that we're gonna be dealing with here. I actually, when I first came to the Senate in 2009, served as chair of a similar committee that was called Commerce and Workforce Development. That hasn't existed for the last few years, so I'm very pleased that this committee has been created. And I also have served on the Oregon Workforce Investment Board and been a chief sponsor of the Career and Technical Education legislation, so I'm very excited about working with the other members on these issues.
Representative Gelser. I'm sorry, Senator Gelser?
Either one works. like the rest of you, I was in the House. My name is Sarah Gelser, and I am the new senator from Corvallis, Albany, Philomath, Millersburg, Tangent, and the unincorporated areas of Lynn and Benton counties. I had some of the workforce issues in our education committee, have really enjoyed working with a number of you on career and technical education initiatives. When I was on a school board, that was actually an area of significant concern for me, both in building a new high school, making sure that we had the facilities for these programs, and when we went out for a local option levy, designating money within that for staff to teach those. The other issue that I have a passion for that I hope comes up in this group, I serve on a group called the National Council on Disability, and we've been looking at the way people with disabilities integrate into the workforce, particularly their exclusion from the minimum wage and their inability to break into the integrated workforce as opposed to sheltered workshops. So I'm looking forward to working on building a workforce that works for everybody.
Thank you. Senator Knope.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tim Canope from Senate District 27, which includes Bend, Redmond, Tumalo, and Sun River. And I have, I think, a unique affinity for a lot of the issues on this committee. One of my first jobs, I started out with minimum wage. My first job was actually a paper route, and I'm quite confident was below minimum wage, although I worked very hard at it. I've also been a minimum wage employer. Have written personnel policies relating to sick leave, vacation time, and many of the issues I think that we're going to discuss in this committee. I'm also the in my other job, I'm the Executive Vice President of the Central Oregon Builders Association, and we have many members, over 600 members, and many of them have both union and non-union employees, and have to work through many of the rules and regulations that are passed by the legislature. And so I think I have a long history and background on a lot of these issues.
That's great. So I will say my first job was selling TV guides, which was probably a rung below newspapers. Actually, I worked my way up to newspapers. All right, thank you all. Why don't we move to, we have some committee measures that need introduction. So I'm going to close the organizational meeting and open a work session for introduction of committee members, measures. Vice Chair Thatcher.
Mr. Chair, I move that LC 1640, dated January 20th, 2015, and LC 3728, dated January 23rd, 2015, and LC 3649, dated January 27th, 2015, I think that's the last of it, be introduced as committee bills.
Thank you, Vice Chair Thatcher. Vice Chair Thatcher has moved that LC 1640, dated January 20th, 2015, LC 3728, dated January 23rd, 2015, and LC 3649, dated January 27th, 2015, be introduced as committee bills. Matt, would you tell us something about these bills?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, LC 1640 directs public contracting agency to suspend right of certified disadvantaged minority, women, or emerging small business enterprises to bid on or participate in public contract if certified disadvantaged minority, women, or emerging small business enterprise fails to perform commercially useful function in public contract. LC 3728 increases the age of youth for whom Youth Development Council may oversee unified system of services from 20 years to 24 years. And LC 3649 establishes State Apprenticeship Education and Training Fund and continuously appropriates monies in fund to State Apprenticeship and Training Council and Bureau of Labor and Industries for specified purposes. It also requires contracting agency to pay into a State Apprenticeship Education and Training Fund amount equivalent to $500 for each $1 million increment of contracting agency's share of public improvement contract price above the threshold amount of $1 million. It exempts the Department of Transportation in certain circumstances, declares an emergency effective on passage.
Thank you, Matt. And again, colleagues, these bills, as is the case, we're not asking you to vote on the substance of these bills, but just to enter them into the system, into the process. Anyone have any questions? Okay, hearing none, are there any objections to introducing these bills, these LCs, as committee bills? Hearing none, they are so introduced. Okay, with that, I will close this work session, and we move to the information session. I see that Steve is here, but Brad, I think, is tied up. Steve, how do you want to do it? Should we go forward, or should we go into recess?
Yep. At your pleasure, but I think we can proceed with the apprenticeship portion.
Okay, why don't we do that? Okay, I'm going to open up an information hearing on introduction to labor and apprenticeship, i.e. Workforce 101, Part 1. And it's my pleasure to call up Steve Sims, who will give us an overview of how apprenticeship works here in the state of Oregon. Steve, welcome.
Thank you, Senator Dembrough, committee members. I'm happy to be in front of you today. I think we're going to have to work with these screens just for a second.
Yeah, and do introduce yourself for the record, please.
Yes. Perfect. Great, thank you. Stephen Sims, S-I-M-M-S. I am the administrator for the Apprenticeship and Training Division of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Apprenticeship is one of the four major areas that the Bureau specializes its work in. When Commissioner Avakian's here, you'll hear a little bit about the wage and hour function, a little bit about the civil rights function, and about our technical assistance for employers. Along with technical assistance, we're kind of the good guys. We actually want to make things better. I think the same is true for civil rights and wage and hour, but it's positive because we're talking about putting more people to work and improving not only the plight of Oregon's workforce, making us more competitive, but making sure that individuals have a chance to obtain family wage jobs. When we talk about apprenticeship as regulated by the state, we are talking about registered apprenticeship. It is actually a legal contract established by state and federal law. There are certain promises that the state of Oregon makes to apprentices. There are certain promises that the employers who decide to have apprentices make to those individuals. And the apprentices, in turn, owe certain obligations to their employers and to the state of Oregon. The Apprenticeship and Training Division helps employers and industry associations develop apprenticeship programs. We register those programs and register those apprentices so we can track them as they proceed through the system. We conduct program compliance reviews, and we ensure that all of those legal requirements that are set out in state and federal law are met. We also facilitate the use of registered apprenticeship as another element or tool in the state workforce toolkit. Just a real basic primer on registered apprenticeship. We work based upon industry standards. There are national guideline standards available for most apprenticeable occupations. In Oregon, about 80 to 85% of our programs are in the building and construction trades. One thing I'll talk about near the end of my presentation is our efforts to work with the State Workforce Board and the Employment Department to expand the apprenticeship training model beyond building and construction. When you look at the elements of apprenticeship, the idea of paid, supervised on-the-job training, mandatory classroom training, that should work for every single occupation where we see skills and workforce shortages. So one thing we want to do is make sure we can expand beyond building and construction. I stated it's paid, supervised training, and that's why I think registered apprenticeship is probably the best workforce strategy in the state of Oregon. On average, and it depends upon the economy, because you have to have employment to have apprentices, but on average, when the economy is good, we have up to 8,300 apprentices. When the economy is down, particularly the last two severe recessions, our numbers dipped down to around 4,600 apprentices. But every one of those apprentices is paid, and they're paid very well, as I'll talk about later. The only government support for registered apprenticeship in the state is what goes into support our office. So you are getting people credentials with very little public investment in them. It's private industry that makes registered apprenticeship run. Mandatory classroom training is also required of all registered apprenticeship programs. Apprentices have to go to school for at least 144 hours for each year of their apprenticeship. In most cases, those classroom hours can count towards an associate's degree. An apprentice completing a four-year apprenticeship program with the addition of 9 to 12 additional general ed credits, depending on what school they went to, would be eligible for an associate's degree. So we're not only getting that industry certification, but we're building an educational base for the state of Oregon. Most apprenticeship programs last 3 to 4 years, although we do allow competency-based programs in non-licensed trades. In other words, if the industry and the employer say that this individual has demonstrated all the competencies necessary to be recognized as a professional in their industry, they may be advanced a little bit more quickly. And as I stated a little bit earlier, all registered apprenticeship programs require that classroom instruction.
Steve, can I just butt in? Could you say something about the difference between licensed and other than licensed?
Certainly. Because of health and safety issues, the plumbing occupations, and there are two specific plumbing occupations that require licensing, and most of the electrical occupations, and this can be confusing because there are 27 different electrical specialties, but 9 of them require licenses from the Building Codes Division. It's just because these are dealing with electricity, dealing with our water service, they would require a license for a journeyman to practice them, practice in those trades. By the same token, to learn them, because apprentices are out there working, they receive licenses from our office. The licenses at the journey level, you pay for, you take an exam. At our office, once you're in an apprenticeship program and you're deemed competent and capable, you receive a license to train as an apprentice. One thing to note is in our licensed programs, the graduation rates are substantially higher because you can't work without that license. I think at our plumbing trades, the average statewide is about a 79% completion rate. In the electrical trades, it's closer to 85%. So those licenses are really important. In all of the other trades, individuals may work without a license, but they are supervised by their employers, by a local apprenticeship committee, and by our office. I talked about classroom instruction. I think that's really important because one of the issues facing apprenticeship right now is making sure we're getting good applicants into the trades and to access these valuable training opportunities. For most apprenticeship programs, the minimum qualifications for applicants to apply might be high school diploma, in a couple of cases, only have to be past the eighth grade. In the licensed trades, they want some algebra skill. So that's what's in black and white. But it's a competitive industry where people are paying a lot of money to train individuals. And we know, and this has been the case for at least 10 years, the feedback we get from our program sponsors is it's hard to get young people who can be ready to work and ready to take on the responsibility of being productive. Part of the reason for the difficulty in finding new workers is that we don't teach trades in our schools anymore. We don't have shop class anymore. I know we have something new called career and technical education, but a lot of that goes beyond building and construction and manufacturing. Kids are not coming into the industry with the raw materials that they need to be successful. Unlike apprenticeship programs in other countries, and many European countries make extensive use of apprentices, those apprentices transition right out of high school. That's not what happens in the United States. Only about 1 in 5 apprentices in Oregon are under the age of 25. The average age of apprentices entering a program is 28, and the average age of apprentices overall in Oregon is 30. That's really much too late for them to get into a career and to get them on the road to paying taxes. So we need to do more to strengthen that connection. The ability to integrate vocational training within the K-12 system is essential in our eyes to the growth of registered apprenticeship and to having a trained workforce. One thing that we'd like to see at some point in time, and this is the Workforce Committee, is a statewide policy to expand apprenticeship, and that's going to be based on what we're doing in our schools. Our biggest workforce development tool is K-12. Look at the budget of the K-12 system, look at our workforce budget. The work has to be done at the K-12 system, and we really feel that's going to be essential to serving our students and our employers. If individuals can enter these programs, the pay they receive is substantial, and that's really a hard graph to read. But I will tell you that when you start in an apprenticeship program, usually you earn 45% to 50% of what a journey level worker would make. And then, as long as you're going to school and completing all your classes successfully and getting good reports at work, 6-7 months later, you'll get a raise up 5%, 6%, and that will keep going on until you complete your program. But when individuals come into the program, they start at that lower wage. So there's a discussion about minimum wage a little bit earlier, and that's right about here. You can see most of our programs pay above $10 an hour to start. So that individual's going to get in, and they're going to be earning at least $10 an hour. And they're going to go up once every 6 months or so. Now, way up at the top here, you see a couple of starting wages around $31, $32. Those are the exceptions and not the rules. We have a number of programs in the utility industries, linemen, meter persons, and they make a lot of money at journey level. They top out at around $44, $45. So they start their apprentices at a slightly skewed scale, around $31 an hour. When we talk to prospective apprentices, people who are shopping for a career opportunity, I try not to talk about wages. That's not what they need to know about. What they need to know about is the career that they're about to embark on. But again, I do want to say the wages are impressive if someone can take advantage of those opportunities. The opportunities are available statewide. The chart on the left-hand side shows you the percentage of active apprentices as of the end of last year, of 2014, statewide. So you can see the much darker shading in the Portland metropolitan area. That means we have a lot of apprentices in the Portland metro area. You can see the rural parts of the state, particularly in eastern Oregon, are really, really light. We do not have a lot of apprentices out there. That is not a problem of apprenticeship. 56% of all active apprentices and 50.1% of all apprentices who completed their programs last year resided in either Clackamas, Multnomah, or Washington County. The other counties along the I-5 corridor were responsible for 31.6% of all active apprentices and 33% of all completers, and the other 20% or so are outside of the metro area in I-5. Again, The distribution of those jobs is not necessarily a Portland problem, because when you look at the map to the right, that is statewide employment overall. And as you can see, much similar distribution of where the work is. The metro area is really good. The valley is lagging behind. And we have some major problems in eastern Oregon and along the coast. That's where the jobs are. Apprenticeship is where the jobs are. One thing that I think we can look at from economic development in those rural counties is how do we generate more learn-as-you-earn programs in those rural areas. There's some unique things we can do with related instruction by collaborating with the community colleges out there. I think apprenticeship would be a great way for us to begin to stimulate employment outside of the metro area in the I-5 corridor. And there's no shortage of registered apprenticeships in Oregon. There's just a shortage of jobs, as we all know. As far as the performance of the programs in our office, these are the guidelines that we had set for ourselves during the last biennium. You will see that in one of the goals was to graduate at least 1,300 apprentices. For fiscal year 2013-15, we fell substantially short of that goal. And the reason is pretty simple. Those apprentices who were in the 2013-15 cohort started in 2009-2010. Our registration numbers were way down. There were not a lot of apprentices working at that time period. Consequently, we didn't have a lot of people to turn out. We have already seen in the past 18 months our registration numbers increase by about 2,000 active apprentices, so we figure in 3 or 4 years we're going to be up around 1,800 to 1,900 apprentices graduating. For the next biennium, we've set a goal of 1,280 apprentices graduating. Given the performance of the economy, I am sure we're going to exceed that by a good margin. In order to get there, we have gradually increasing goals with respect to the number of new apprentices registered. During the last fiscal year, we greatly exceeded our goal by registering 2,851 apprentices. I think we're on the pace right now so far in the first half of fiscal year 2015 that we will break 3,000 registrations for the fiscal year. Finally, and this is a goal that we spend a lot of time on, and I picked out the goal regarding minority participation, but it's an even larger issue with respect to the employment of women in the apprenticeable trades. We have gradually built the numbers up from 10% of all registered apprentices being protected class minorities in 2001 to 16% today. Our goal for the next fiscal year will be to get that number up to 17%. We will continue to try to work on that goal, but what's more depressing is our difficulties with respect to making apprenticeship available and accessible to women. On the one hand, because we're so heavily concentrated in the building and construction trades, Oregon has the highest percentage of female apprentices in the building and construction trades in the United States. We just really do a good job in that area. But what's a good job nationally makes the whole discussion moot, because we are at 6.5% female participation in the state of Oregon in the construction trades. Nationwide, the average is 3%. We work with a number of community partners. We do a number of different outreach activities. We work with our employers, and our employers, to their credit, many of them engage in some interesting strategies to attract women, but we cannot get to the point where we are completing women at the rate, or registering and completing women at the rate that we would like to. You can see those overall registration numbers there, and the peaks and valleys that you see there also follow the general registration of apprentices based upon the economy. When the numbers go up, you know the economy was good, 2007-08, and you could also see where we started to bottom out. We know that between, just check my figures here very quickly. The percentages here show that the percentage of minority participants as a percentage of all participants between 2008 and 2012 grew 5%, really good growth. A lot of sponsors wanted to hold on to their apprentices during that period, and we provided technical assistance to help them meet their EEO goals and making sure they held on to those minority apprentices. During the same period of time, female registrations only grew about 1%. What's tied to those gross numbers is retention, people who actually complete the programs. These are gross retention numbers for all, completion numbers for all apprentices. We know that between 2006 and 2010, that 78% of all African Americans who were registered to an apprenticeship program were terminated from their program without benefit of completion. We know that 62% of all women who were registered to a program between 2006 and 2010 terminated from their program without completions. This compares with the number of only 45% of white males terminating from their program without benefit of completion. We are working, again, with a number of community groups. We have interns researching this issue. We think we have some answers, but it's simply unacceptable to the Labor Commissioner and to the state of Oregon that there's not equity with respect to retention in these programs, and we will continue to work to make that better. Just some closing comments. Apprenticeship is always going to be a tool that's utilized by the construction industry. The model fits their needs very well. It ties into the prevailing wage law. It's perfect for what they need. They need more apprentices and more journeymen because the workforce is getting older. To a lesser extent, the same is true with manufacturing. We also need to find ways to expand this model into other occupations. It's not just for construction. It can be for everything. When I started here 23 years ago with the division, I looked through some old files, and there used to be apprenticeship programs for tailors and bookkeepers and accountants. We can do that. We can take the investment that people currently make in community colleges and go to community colleges, and they're not even working in the occupation they're studying. And we can say, how can we bring you together with employers and make that combined value of apprenticeship on-the-job training while you're going to school? How can we use that to make a more vital workforce for the state? And again, combining paid on-the-job training is a win-win because that student is making money while they're learning. We need to continue to link K through 12 education and community colleges with registered apprenticeship for the benefit of students and employers. We need to increase female and minority participation and completion. And we need to continue to work with the Employment Department, the Department of Education, and the Office of Community Colleges and Workforce Development to make registered apprenticeship a part of Oregon's overall workforce and education strategy. You have a more detailed report there, a 9-page report that has a few more facts in it and copies of the PowerPoint slides. But if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them right now.
Thank you very much, Steve. Questions? Yeah, I have a couple just to get us started.
Certainly.
The problem of the poor completion rates for minorities and women, I know you said that you're working on analyzing that, but are there preliminary thoughts that you have of why, women and minorities face particular challenges?
Senator Denbrough, committee members, I do think, based on our research, we have some preliminary ideas. I don't think that there's anything along the lines of any outward discrimination against women or people of color, but what we're finding is that much like any job, you usually do something that someone you know, your parents, your friends, your relatives did. It provides an entree into the field or occupation. You get tips on where jobs might be. If you have a difficult time, you have a network to go to with questions. We don't find that with respect to people of color, and we really don't find that with respect to women. We don't find a lot of parents telling their daughter that, hey, you could make $39 an hour as a plumber. We don't find a lot of minority journey-level business owners who can say, I've got a great opportunity for you or your neighbor down the street. One of the challenges for us is trying to create those parallel networks, those informal networks, by getting individuals interested in apprenticeship out to some of the training centers to see how things work, by having them participate in pre-apprenticeship programs where contractors can meet these individuals and begin to give them some tips. One thing is, we know we have to create a parallel network for women and people of color. The other thing we find is that there is still a certain culture that goes with construction. People do still talk certain ways that may not be the most welcoming to people of color and women. Again, we don't find anything intentional. It's just it's been that way for a long time. So we need to work with our apprenticeship programs and the sponsoring employers just to work on cultural competency, to know what you say and how it might affect what you do. And finally, the one thing that we do know creates additional opportunities for women and people of color is more jobs. The more opportunity there are to offer employment to women and people of color in the trades, the better off we're going to be.
The other challenge that you pointed to was the challenge of apprenticeships in the rural parts of the state, and part of that is a function of the jobs that are in the local areas, but you suggested that there might be other challenges as well related to the opportunity to train. Can you say something more about that?
Certainly, Senator Denbrough. I think that when we go into some of the more rural areas and talk about apprenticeship, there are some, natural fears that employers out there have. One of them is, and I've heard this at least a dozen times, is that why would I spend the money, because it does cost money to train, you're investing wages in that individual, in many cases you're paying for their classroom instruction, and I'll take 3-4 years to train this individual, and he or she gets their journey card, which is as good as a college diploma, and as soon as they get that diploma, they bolt for Portland, they bolt for Eugene, they bolt for the Valley. How do I get them to stay here and stay with us? That's something that we need to work on. Another difficulty is that, as I said earlier, related classroom instruction is an essential component of registered apprenticeship. Most of the private training centers run by both our union and our non-union sponsors are in Portland and in the Valley. Outside of that, the training's done at community colleges. Well, if you live in Morrow, Oregon, the nearest community college is about 65 miles away. That's a lot of travel. What do we do to address that? I see this as a great opportunity for us because that's where we begin to build those relationships with our K-12 systems. Years ago, at least in the Portland area, adult apprenticeship classes were taught in Portland public schools. After those shops finished with their students and sent them home, they said, hey, we got all the material you need. We can train you here. There's no reason why we cannot turn our public schools, our high schools, into adult training centers not only making that opportunity for adult apprenticeship, but having a lab or a workshop for kids to learn their math and reading and everything else in an applied setting using those same facilities. And I think the final one, as we all know, is sometimes there's just not a lot of work in those rural areas, and they don't see the need to train a workforce. We have to educate our employers that training and being prepared is an ongoing process, and even if you don't have a lot of work, there's value in bringing someone along over time.
Thank you. You know, one of the interesting, potentially exciting initiatives that are out there is a federal program to incentivize apprenticeship in the states. I forget what the sum is, but it's quite substantial, where states are being asked to apply for grants to come up with new apprenticeship models, actually, for the states. And I'm sure you know about that. One of the things that I'm interested in is using that, seeing Oregon apply for such a grant that would really focus on apprenticeship in the rural areas, you know, because I think there's a particular need there, and it might, you know, certainly it would involve us, require us to look beyond the traditional construction trades and, you know, as you say, perhaps look at manufacturing, food processing, some of the other growth industries that we have in the state. Do you know what's going on in that area, Steve?
Certainly, and in fact, we will be meeting to discuss that tomorrow. In advance of the grants being announced, we began to speak with the Office of Community Colleges and Workforce Development and with the Employment Department. It's a large grant. Nationwide, it is $100 million, the American Apprenticeship Opportunity Grants. They will be making 25 grants, and the grants will go for a period of 5 years. That's a lot of money. Based on our preliminary discussions, we decided that the Employment Department would take the lead on planning our grant application. So we've had a number of discussions, and I am lobbying heavily for an approach just as you said. I believe that manufacturing is a key underserved area in the state of Oregon, particularly with respect to the food processing industry, which I believe is the third largest industry in the state of Oregon. Working with the Employment Department, we did some surveying of employment needs and the size of the companies, and I believe there were approximately 51 food processing companies in the state that did at least $10 million of business. They're going to need people. Much of that is mechanized now, so you need people who have the skills to operate the machinery that's involved. So we're looking at least the proposal that I'm pushing is one that is based upon the food processing industry and the manufacturing skills associated with it. And I specifically talk about the manufacturing skills because the same skills that you would need in the manufacturing segment, the production segment of the food processing industry, are similar to the skills that you would use in a heavy machinery industry. So if we can build skill-based training around apprenticeship with food processing as the basis, and then offer to employers around the state with these funds through the community colleges the ability to do training in other heavy industries, I think we can, make those industries more efficient and provide them with their future workforce, and B, satisfy the obligations of the grant by increasing the number of registered apprentices in the state by 1,000 individuals within 5 years. So we're still talking and planning. The applications are not due until April 30th, and if any of the committee members wanted more information, I would be happy to confer with our group and make sure that we provide you with that information as our discussions go along.
That's great. I didn't realize you were looking at food processing. I do think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
The key, of course, will be finding industry partners, you know, which is always the case with apprenticeship. And, are there elements of the grant program to create incentives for industry? Or what is it that lures industry into making this kind of commitment?
I think generally it is a recognition that they need to address their workforce needs. And I think, Senator Dembrow, frequently employers don't look at the need to invest in their own workforce. They just say, how can I get the bodies to do the work? So the incentive we want to offer is, here is this curriculum, and here is this training plan that we will lay out for you, articulate for you, that will get you those bodies. And your investment is minimal. Give them the opportunities to learn about your facility, learn about what you're doing, and then make sure that if people complete the pre-training, that you can make an apprenticeship available in your shop. I think employers, because they have 101 things on their mind, want that training function to be easy. So I think our goal is going to be to make it as easy as possible for an employer to say, I can fulfill my workforce needs simply by signing up and participating in this program. We still have a lot of work to do before we put the elements of that program together, but I think that's the approach we're taking.
Great. Thanks, Steve. Any other questions or comments about this? I will say, colleagues, that I think we're going to be looking at a committee bill that will be a task force bill, kind of similar to the task force that was created that led to the revitalization of our career technical education and creating the grant program. A task force on apprenticeship for the 21st century that will look at a number of the issues that Steve has been bringing before us.
And Senator Dimbrough, committee members, the last thing I'd like to say is whatever this committee looks at, regardless of whether or not it's a registered apprenticeship, I really think it would behoove the state to look at how we combine our workforce activities with our educational resources and try to double down on that large investment we've made in education.
Great. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, committee members.
Okay, I'm going to call up Commissioner Avakian. I thought we were saving the best for last, but now we're truly saving the best for last.
No, you had Steve go first. I think that was very wise. Mr. Chair, Senators, I'm Brad Avakian, Commissioner of Labor and Industries for the state. I want to thank you for inviting me to share a few thoughts on what the Bureau of Labor and Industries does and what it will be doing, and also thank you for inviting Mr. Sims down. As you can see, he is our expert and the state's expert on all things apprenticeship and stands ready to help you this session with whatever you need. At the Bureau, you have an electronic version that describes things that the Bureau does. I'm just going to summarize that for you, so it's really just for your benefit. But at the Bureau, we protect people, keeping them free from discrimination in employment, housing, and public accommodations. We enforce the state's wage and hour laws, making sure that workers are paid the wages that they're due, they're treated fairly on the job, and also through apprenticeship training and our Technical Assistance for Employers program, do everything we can to help businesses be as successful as they can. We have primarily four different areas in which we do this. The first, in civil rights. We are the state's chief law enforcement agency with respect to protecting people's civil rights, and that means in enforcing the non-discrimination laws in employment. It also means that we do all of the state and federal housing discrimination investigations and any discrimination that might occur in a public place, in a restaurant, a city park, a bowling alley. We enforce those public accommodation laws as well. In wage and hour, we enforce the state's minimum wage law, the prevailing wage laws, the meal and rest period rules. We set the prevailing wages for the state. And just to give you an idea of the scope of the work between those two divisions, they get about 60,000 calls a year from Oregonians that just have questions about their rights in those areas. And that boils down to about 5,000 formal investigations a year. On the other side of the agency, we have the state's Technical Assistance for Employers program. The booklets that Carrie just handed out to you are some of the things that we produce to assist employers. But in that part of the agency, we get about 20,000 calls a year from businesses that are just looking for help navigating their way through complicated state and federal laws. In addition, we do between 100 and 200 seminars for businesses in all four corners of the state, teaching business owners and managers how to stay in compliance with the law and what best practices might be in any particular area. We'll even go to an employer and create a specialized training for whatever that employer seems to think their particular people need, such as if they wanted some more instruction in the differences between Oregon family leave law and the federal family leave law. We could tailor a program specifically for them. And then the manuals that you have in front of you. We publish these manuals periodically, make them available to businesses, and as you can see, they are really the greatest guide we have on how to interpret and apply in lay terms, not so that it sounds like something that was written by a lawyer or a judge, but in language that hopefully anybody could understand, that a business owner could have on their shelf ready to help them in day-to-day dealings with their employees on any area of employment and labor law in the state. This is a terrific gem for Oregon employers that doesn't exist anywhere else, and I really want to praise the legislature for keeping this program strong. It must be close to 15 or so years ago the funding was eliminated for the technical assistance program, and a couple sessions ago you started funding part of that program again, enabling us to make these available, these resources available to even more more employers. And then lastly, Mr. Sims already described to you what we're doing in apprenticeship. I just wanted to add a thought to that. We're very eager to expand apprenticeship opportunities to everybody, in particular to women and people of color, but to everybody in the state. And one of the things that we saw recently was that the age of our apprentices were rising. The age of the workforce was rising. Community college students' average age has risen as well into the late 20s. And it was clear to us that one of the reasons for that was the systematic elimination of shop classes from the middle schools and high schools that our state has been experiencing for 20 years. And again, thanks to good work by the legislature, you know, a couple years ago you created the Career and Technical Education Revitalization Grant Fund. Now, that's the fund in the Department of Education that the Bureau of Labor also assists with that is seeing the return of shop classes to our middle schools and high schools. And just to give you an update, in the short time since you created that grant fund, we've been able to restore programs to over 200 middle schools and high schools. That's brought career education back to over 100,000 of our students in the state. Now we're seeing things like the traditional thing you think of with a shop class, wood shop, metal shop, and welding. But we're also seeing things like the program in Joseph, Oregon, way up in the northeast corner of the state, that created a program in advanced computer-aided design software to attract manufacturing to northeast Oregon. Programs like sports medicine and pre-med out of Silverton High School and the middle schools have an advanced program in the sciences to prepare students for that. Next year, Beaverton School District, through one of the grants that you provided, is going to start an advanced program in biomedical engineering. Or actually, this school year, they started in biomedical engineering. So we're seeing traditional crafts as well as these 21st century types of shop classes back, and it is our hope that once we build on these pathways up to community college, apprenticeship, or directly into a job, that these will have proven not just to be good for students, but be a terrific resource for Oregon's employers as well. With that, the agency remains ready to help you in whatever issues you have come up this session that relate to employment and labor law and workforce training, and I would be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you very much, Brad. Thanks for coming, and thank you for your tireless work on behalf of career technical ed. It's really made a difference. I think we all support, I think we all signed on, everyone except Matt up here, you know, has signed on to that legislation. And but you've been just a great advocate, public advocate for it.
Well, Mr. Chair, it's nice of you to say, but it's been a terrific partnership, and I thank you very much as well.
Yes, Vice Chair Thatcher.
Just a quick comment. I do appreciate the technical assistance for employers. I just want to say your people do good work. They're very, very responsive, and I appreciate that.
That's nice of you. You know, just this year, Mr. Chair and committee members, just this year we have instituted a new phone system so that when employers call in, instead of having to leave a message and get a call back, even though we were returning about 98% of our calls within a day, now if you call in, if one of our persons is already on the line with an employer, it'll bounce to the next person in line, and if they're on the phone, it'll go to the next person. So we're now able to answer almost every question that fast. But thank you for mentioning, Senator.
So what challenges are you facing, Brad, as an agency that you know, you would like to see the legislature help with this session? How's that for a softball?
Mr. Chair, Senators, it's a fair question, and we do have some things before you, but we have them. We were very careful in what we put before you this session. We want to be able to do some of the good work that we're doing and do it faster and even better. The Technical Assistance for Employers program is right up near the top of our list. We do have a request in for 3 additional people so that we can reach even more employers than we're currently reaching now. And Oregon's business community, as Senator Thatcher mentioned, finds this to be just a tremendous resource. And we've been able to provide all of these things, the phone calls, the 20,000 calls a year roughly, all of that is free. But because of budget cuts from many years ago, we need to charge employers for the seminars that they come to. Those books can cost 40 to 60 bucks each, I think. Makes it very difficult for small businesses to participate in the same way. We would love to get to the point where these things were provided free to Oregon's employers. Adding a few more people to our division and you staying committed to the funding may help us get there at some point. Career and technical education also right at the top of our list. This has been tremendous for our public schools and students. I cannot express to you how many employers have jumped on board to voluntarily help because they know they're going to get the good local workforce that they need as these programs continue. So there's also a bill to refill that grant fund and continue expanding in that area as well. So those are 2 things just to keep near the top.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Mbakian, for coming. All right, colleagues, that brings us to the end of our first day of work. You all will owe this committee 50 minutes in the future, but I think this is a good way for us to end. Again, look forward to working with you the remainder of the session. With that, I'm going to close the information session, and we are adjourned.